That episode number 16 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast is brought to you by the latest Yankees Instagram caption, "The Gospel According to Luke."
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
I gotta crack an inside joke. Up to the Lord. There you go. All right. Welcome to episode number 16 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. You can find us, this podcast, anywhere that you get podcasts, including iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Blueberry. Of course, we're at Pinstripe Lanes on social media and available at pinstripelanes.com and pinstripelanespodcast.com. We bought both domains. We splurged a little bit. I'm Ralphie Aversa. I splurged at Ralphie Aversa on all social networks if you want to reach out to me directly. Don't want to chat too much. Yankees, of course, in the middle of their final regular season homestand and getting ready to hopefully sweep the Red Sox. They've already taken 2 of 3. They had taken 1 of 3 when we taped the majority of this week's episode with a great guest, which is why I'm not going to go too long here. I got a lot of stories to talk about. I was at the stadium last weekend. Maybe you saw Renan Darryl Strawberry. We'll save that story for another time. Obviously, postseason tickets are on sale, so we could chat about that too. But our guest this week, the very talented in-studio and in-field reporter for MLB Network, a lot to chat about with Heidi Watney. She is our guest here for episode 16 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. And welcome back to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. We're at Pinstripe Lanes on social media. And of course, you can find us wherever you get podcasts and pinstripelanespodcast.com. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Our guest this week on the show is a studio host and reporter for MLB Network. You can see her during the regular season nightly on Quick Pitch. She also contributes in the field to MLB Network's coverage of the postseason and its All-Star game. During the offseason, she can be seen on the morning show Hot Stove. She's a native of Fresno, California, and a graduate of the University of San Diego, who from 2008 to 2011 had a front row seat to the rivalry, serving as the Red Sox field reporter for the team's flagship TV station, NESN. Heidi Watney joins us this week here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Thanks so much for the time, Heidi. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Ralphie. Thank you for having me.
So, obviously, it's timely with the Red Sox final trip of the year to the Bronx, at least during the regular season, happening this week. We're in the middle of the series. Yesterday, when the game gets moved from a 1:05 first pitch to a 7:05 first pitch, does that affect your schedule at all in studio at MLB Network or no?
It doesn't affect our schedule in studio because Quick Pitch airs, you know, usually midnight, 1 a.m. This Thursday, it's on at 11 p.m. because there's no late West Coast games. But Quick Pitch is on so late at night that the only thing it would affect us is if they started playing after midnight, they kept going and they were in like the 19th inning at 2 in the morning, then we'd still be following it live on Quick Pitch. But yeah, that didn't affect me. It did affect my husband, who is a scout and was going to that game as a scout. So actually, he woke up in the morning and I told him, "Oh, your game's been changed. It's a 7 o'clock start now. You can go back to bed."
Well, that's great that you caught him before he left the house, because I was listening. You know, the game yesterday was obviously also on MLB Network.
Yeah.
And I was listening to John Smoltz. He called into Dan Patrick's show and they didn't catch him before he had left for the game. So he was at the stadium. And according to, I don't know if you guys had talked about this in the office or not, but according to what he was telling Dan Patrick, he was going to stay there for the entire day until first pitch at 7 o'clock.
That's what he told my husband when Mike got home last night from the game. And you know, he said he had talked to John Smoltz and he had gotten there at about 9 a.m. And so obviously before they had made the game time change, they said, "Well, 9 a.m., when they change it to 7, doesn't he just go home at that point? Go back to the hotel for a bit?" I know Smoltz doesn't live here in the New York area, but goodness, I would go take a break and come back at, say, you know, 3 or 4 in the afternoon. But no, he said he stayed there all day long. Good for him, I guess. Yeah. They have very good food at the Yankee Stadium press box, so maybe that enticed them to stick around. I don't know.
We hear about the food a lot on the Yes Network broadcast, especially if Paul O'Neill's a color commentator. You can make a bet on it. The food's going to come up if Paul's in the booth. But actually, it's funny you bring up the new stadium because I really want to go back to the 4th of July weekend, 2008, the last season of the old stadium, and that happened to be the first time you covered Yankees Red Sox here in the Bronx. What do you remember, Heidi, from that experience, that first Yankees Red Sox experience with Nesson?
Going into the old Yankee Stadium for me was similar to the first time I went into Fenway Park or Wrigley Field. It's one of those historic venues that you just kind of like stop for a moment and appreciate what you're getting to do, the history there in that moment. It kind of gives you goosebumps anytime I go into, you know, any of those older venues. And seeing the new stadium is cool and all its bells and whistles and fancy stuff that they put into it. But the history of the old Yankee Stadium, of Wrigley Field, of Fenway Park, those types of places is something that's really special. And I, as a person who just appreciates history, and particularly baseball history, that wasn't lost on me the first time I went to the old Yankee Stadium.
So then, you know, the following season, you're still with Nesson, and that's, you know, the opening of the new stadium, the aforementioned bells and whistles and all of the other fancy things that they have there. What was the difference, I guess, going from, you know, covering games at the old Yankee Stadium to then that following season, the new stadium?
Well, from a sideline reporter's perspective, you know, the old Yankee Stadium had a lot of like dingy tunnels with like wet AstroTurf. No matter if it hadn't rained in weeks, the AstroTurf was always wet on the ground and inside these tunnels. Oh, you're not sure why. And, you know, the camera well, which, you know, as an in-game reporter, you're sitting in the camera well the entire game. The camera well at the old Yankee Stadium was very crowded. The new Yankee Stadium, I mean, it was as big as a New York apartment, which granted aren't very big, but still much larger than the old camera well. When they designed it, they kept in mind there could be four television broadcasts doing a particular game, and you've got sideline reporters and you have still photographers. And so there's plenty of room for everyone in there. And access tunnels and different things like that, you know, old stadiums, they didn't think about access tunnels for press and television and whatever. So everyone kind of came down the same tunnel, whether it's a player or a media member. And the new stadium has, you know, media has to go through different tunnels and stuff like that. So they very much designed the stadium, obviously, mostly for the fans and the players, but they kept in mind television broadcasts, which is helpful for those doing a broadcast. And, you know, the new press box is huge, plenty of seats for everyone, and great food, great buffet. You know, I will say, as a reporter who covered all 162 games plus the postseason for 4 years for the Red Sox, the reporters, anyone in the press, whether it's a writer or a TV reporter, definitely, like, part of the stadium rating is the food that you are served as a member of the media, because that's where you're eating your meals. You're at the ballpark for, you know, 10, 12, maybe more hours a day. So you've got to eat something. For me, having some decently healthy options and not just like burger and fries every day was nice.
You know, I mean, obviously as fans of Yankee Stadium, we know about so many different food options, whether it's in the concourse or the food court, or obviously if you have a legend seat, so on and so forth. I mean, what were some of the more, were there any memorable food items at the Yankee Stadium press box or no?
I will say I have been lucky enough. MLB Network has four legend seats to every game. So about once a year, you know, they let us talent get them. And oh my gosh, I took my parents to a game. I was like, we're going a couple of hours early just to hit up the buffet and the legend seats. Cause it's legendary. It really is. It's so good. They have every piece of food that you can imagine. That is not available to the media, but if you have an opportunity as a fan to splurge and get a couple of legend seats, that has your food, that has your everything is included, your entertainment, your everything. It really is a treat. In the press box, huh? You know, as I was just saying, I like healthier options than burger and fries. I do love the soft serve machine up there. I like really healthy options like the ice cream. You know what they've also had up there? They have like a taco station or a pasta bar some nights, like off to the side, which is kind of neat because it's someone there like making it and it seems fresher than food that's been kind of sitting out under a warmer. I do like that.
Of course.
I will say I don't partake in them every night, but their cupcakes that they have, they look very impressive.
Yeah, Stadium really upped their dessert game this year, especially with the introduction of these like Grand Slam milkshakes that they have, and they serve them in the Legends section as well as the food court, and then I think there's a place on the in the terrace level as well where they serve them. It's so funny you mentioned that about the Legend seats. I did the same thing. I was able to get Legend seats through a charity auction. I ended up getting them like below face value, which is unheard of. And wow. I brought my mom Mother's Day weekend when the A's were in town, so it was like so cool. And I'm yeah. Well, you know, every now and then, but I'm sure you like it's the same experience with your parents, and I'm sure you've been able to afford them some cool experiences. But like you walk in and it's unlike anything else. Like I'm sure they went right to like the crab legs and the lobster tails, right? Like that whole raw bar section. It's so ridiculous.
It is. I mean, there's literally like a pasta station, a sushi station, crab legs, steak, burgers, hot dogs, like anything you could want to eat. And then the dessert bar. I mean, that's just. Literally, almost anything you want to eat is available to you in the Legend seats. It's crazy.
Heidi Watney from MLB Network here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. You mentioned something else. You mentioned that you would spend the game in the camera well. And I feel like, and maybe it's different when you're home media versus visiting media, but I feel like Meredith Marakovitz, a lot of times she's watching the game in the home radio booth. So is that where you would be at Fenway or where you would always be in the camera well?
You know, it does depend on the team broadcast. The 4 years that I was there, my producer wanted me in the camera well the entire game. Like, I was allowed to take a bathroom break if I really needed it, but most games I did not even do that. I didn't dare leave that camera well. And it really just depends on the broadcast. That's just the way I was told and the way I was taught and how they wanted me. I mean, I remember we had a game in Texas in August and they had a thermometer in the camera well. And it said 125 degrees. And my producer was still like, nope, you're staying down there. I was like, I'm going to have a heat stroke. And Don and Jerry during the broadcast were laughing at me because they're like, your face is bright red. I think you're getting sunburned. I was like, nope, I'm pretty sure that's heat stroke setting it, actually. It's 125 degrees in this non-shaded camera well. But that being said, it was a really cool experience. But for Red Sox broadcast, at least when I was there, rain, snow, sun, no matter what, I was in the camera well. I had an umbrella. I remember a game. We opened the season in Cleveland 1 year, and it was so cold that I could have built a snowman next to me in the camera well. Like, oh, no wow. joke, could have built a snowman. And Mike Cameron was on the team at the time, and so the dugout's right next to the camera well at Progressive Field. I think it was Jacobs Field then, but whatever, in Cleveland. And he came over and he like kept bringing me hot chocolate because he's like, you look miserable. Because in the dugout, they have heaters for the players or they have fans on really hot days or some dugouts have misters or whatever. But that's all in the dugout. The camera well does not have those luxuries.
Right.
We have mice and whatever else is in there. But no, it's a cool experience to watch a game from there, and I got to do it for 4 years, and so it's definitely a different experience. But I have noticed many other broadcasts, and I know Meredith because I'll go up and say hi to her during games whenever I pop into Yankee Stadium just as a fan these days, and she is up in their radio or TV booth in between hits. And it just depends on how the team broadcast wants to use you. For me, they wanted me down there at all times in case they wanted to go to me if there was an injury or whatever, or just for more flexibility, I think.
4 seasons in the camera well. How many close calls with foul balls did you have?
I did break a finger on a foul ball one time. I think this was Texas again.
Man, that ballpark at Arlington was a house of horrors for you.
It was, apparently. Pedroia rocketed one in there, and I used to carry a clipboard at that point, and I literally raised my clipboard up to block my face, and it hit my hand holding my clipboard in front of my face, which thankfully it hit my hand and not my face, right. But it broke my middle finger, and my producer made me finish the game. He told me I was being a wimp, and but then after the game, I was like, yeah, my finger's really hurting and it's very swollen. And the team trainer looked at that and he's like, we have an x-ray machine in here. Come here. And they x-rayed it right away and they said it was broken and splinted it. And I was ready to go in 15 minutes. And that was a fun one. I did get a couple. I think I got a foul ball off the forearm that fractured my forearm one spring training.
Oh, jeez.
Michael Wolf hit that one, if I remember correctly. But most of the time, I was able to dodge it. Every now and then, I didn't get out of the way fast enough.
Heidi Watney's here on the Pinstripe Plains podcast. Obviously, now, part of your job with Nesson for those years, you're, you know, obviously around the Red Sox manager and the players. But when you would cover the Yankees, were there any players or coaches that you would speak with regularly or no?
You know, the funny thing about being the Red Sox sideline reporter than covering a Red Sox-Yankees game is that generally the Yankees PR staff didn't want to lend us any of their players to talk to very much. But that being said, I had the pleasure of interviewing Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez, two guys whom I'm still pretty close with now. In fact, I'm seeing Derek Jeter's charity event next Thursday here in the city, his Turn 2 event. And A-Rod I've also stayed in touch with, especially now that he's doing the broadcast for Fox and ESPN. I've talked to him actually more since he is no longer a player and now that he's doing media. Because he's the kind of guy who always wants to learn and wants to be coached. And so he, you know, wanted to learn more about the broadcast side of things, which is admirable about him, that he, you know, he always wants to grow and get better. Who else? I know those were in the days when Brett Gardner was a younger player. And so I feel like if I ever did do interviews, they gave me like Brett Gardner or Jabba Chamberlain, which were the two go-tos. I said, can I interview Mariano Rivera? No, but you can talk to Jabba Chamberlain. Okay. Thanks. Can I talk to Derek Jeter? No, but Brett Gardner's right here. Okay, right. Thanks. They're all great guys. I actually did end up getting a wonderful interview, I remember, with Mariano Rivera. I remember he was reflecting back about his career and talking about his faith and the church he was building. And it was such a great conversation, just really to get to know the person. I mean, obviously, he's a phenomenal pitcher and a closer and, you know, all of that. But just him as a person, I was really impressed with that when I got a chance to sit down and talk with him.
I don't know what exactly you could share. I know Susan Waldman's gone on the record and saying, you know, because A-Rod, I think he's got a lot of friends in the media. And like you said, he's got this penchant for really wanting to learn and improve and perfect his craft, no matter what that craft is, whether he's at the plate or in the studio or in the booth. What type of conversations, whether text or phone or in person, have you guys had about kind of his transition to Sunday Night Baseball and him continuing on as an in-studio analyst as well?
You know, he had contacted me when he first got the job with Fox a couple of years back. And he had contacted me through a friend, I think it was Harold Reynolds at MLB Network, and he said, you know, I really think you do a great job hosting Quick Pitch, and you're so smooth on the air. Who coaches you? Who's your, you know, your television coach? I want to work with that person. I said, well, I don't have a coach. It's just, you know, kind of like an athlete spends, you know, the theory of 10,000 hours. An athlete spends 10,000 hours, you know, playing their sport. They become a pro at it. It becomes second nature to them. It's the same thing for me. I've been doing television for so long. It just becomes, not that I'm saying I'm the greatest at all, but you do something so much that you become proficient at it, to say the least. So that was, you know, very flattering that he thought that. And, you know, I just kind of told him that the thing that he has that the rest of us don't have is the experiences he's had in baseball, from, you know, a lifelong passion of playing the game and all of his experiences playing the game and who he's played with. And, you know, he has something that he can bring to a broadcast that I could never bring to a broadcast. I've never played in a major league game. I mean, I barely can get a hit in like a beer league softball game. So I'm definitely not going to get a hit off of an elite level pitcher. So, you know, when I talked to him about broadcast, that was kind of my advice, just to speak from the heart about his experiences. But if you know A-Rod, you know he wants to practice and work at things. And that's kind of something I didn't know about him as much as a player, but I heard more stories later on. I actually would hear some stories about how he was a good teammate to so many people and he was a hard worker. And, you know, the media gets fixated on images of like dating supermodels or whatever, or some supposed beef with Derek Jeter or whatever. And I was not in the Yankees clubhouse on a daily basis, and I cannot speak to any of that. But I do know that I've heard that he's a hard worker and was a good teammate in terms of like talking baseball, talking about hitting, you know, picking up Jeter's brains, giving advice that he had, that kind of a thing.
You mentioned Derek Jeter's charity. We're wrapping up with Heidi Watney from MLB Network. And of course, you and I got to meet in person a few weeks ago at an event here in the city for David Ortiz's charity. So I kind of do love that you're on both sides of the rivalry, even when it comes to the charitable aspects of the rivalry. But the thing that I noticed about the Ortiz Classic, and obviously we chatted about how I was supposed to join you guys in the DR last year, and I had a bit of a passport issue on the way. So hopefully I'll be set for this year's Golf Classic, but Yankee players past and present will come to David Ortiz's event, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's how I've gotten to know Robinson Cano. Obviously he's with the Mariners now, but got to know him a little better when he was still playing with the Yankees, because he goes every single year. CC Sabathia's been there. There's a number of guys, and David is so respected in the game that, you know, if he asks you to come to his charity event and you are free, a lot of guys go. So it's been a fun way for me to get to know some of the other players in the league that weren't with the Red Sox, you know, more when that's the team that I covered. But now with MLB Network, I cover every team on a nightly basis, but even in person by doing the postseason, the All-Star game, you know, I get to know players on different teams. In fact, I grew up a San Francisco Giants fan, but I covered the Dodgers last postseason. And I was like, you know what? I really like these guys. Justin Turner and Kike Hernandez, and, you know, Chris Taylor and Charlie Culver's and all the guys that were on the roster last year, postseason roster. Kenley Jansen, they were a lot of fun to be around. And of course, Dave Roberts, everybody loves Dave Roberts. He's like the nicest man on the planet. So, you know, that's the great thing about having covered baseball for so long. You get to know these players, a lot of the players and coaches and managers, on more of a personal basis. And you kind of, for me, I root for players a lot now, as opposed to rooting for individual teams. You root for the guys you've met that you really like, you know?
You get to see some of these people, of course, whether it's the Jeter event that's coming up or later this year, the Ortiz mm-hmm. Golf Classic. Will you actually golf in the Golf Classic as well, Heidi, or are you just going to support?
I've done both. I can golf. I have not golfed in a while. I will say I just had a baby last spring, and I don't think I've picked up a club since very early in my pregnancy. So it's been a while, but I can definitely brush up. I've actually played in their Cheaters charity golf tournament as well, and David Ortiz, Ron Darling, a number. You know, if you're a female who can golf, you're good on the golf charity circuit. Because, you know, I get to hit from the ladies' tees, and it's usually a scramble format. So if I hit a bad shot, it's not the end of the world anyway. And I do enjoy golfing. I mean, my family, it's in my blood. My cousin, Nick Watney, plays on tour, and my dad's a golf coach, so. Yeah, so I might play, I might not. It just depends on how I'm feeling that weekend. But I know I'm emceeing the gala, so that's kind of my bigger role in the event. I try to make everyone, you know, cry and feel for what these kids go through, and want to just touch on their emotions, so they'll open up their pocketbooks and make a donation.
Absolutely. I know the event last year raised north of $1 million, and I'm sure this year it'll do great things as well for kids both back in Boston and in David's home of the Dominican Republic. Heidi Watney, MLB Network. So now this is, I think we talked right before we started. This is like a super busy time of year for MLB, and I would imagine for you personally as well, because you're going to transition here from quick pitch to going out and covering these games in stadium during the postseason. Season, right, or now?
Yes, I'm heading out for the, I think I'm on the American League side of things. I'm not 100% sure, but I think I'll be on the ALDS. And so I'll leave, gosh, only like 2 weeks away that it's going to start now. So it is coming up quickly. But yeah, we'll wrap up quick pitch first. And these races, I mean, the American League's pretty much decided. There's a couple things still up for grabs. The Yankees have, I think, a 2.5 game lead on that wild card home field right now. But the National League is where things are really up in the air, and that'll be exciting to watch go down to the wire. And then the thing with the postseason is, and I know the Red Sox have kind of steamrolled everyone in the regular season, but you get a team that's hot in the postseason. Gosh, I remember the 2016 postseason. They assigned me to the Red Sox series because it was David Ortiz's final year. They know I have a good relationship with him, and they wanted me to cover that series. Well, the Red Sox were swept out of the postseason in the first round. I mean, to everybody's shock, but Cleveland went on a tear and ended up taking the Cubs all the way to Game 7 of the World Series that year. So that's the fun part about the postseason is it is a lot on talent, but it's a lot on a team getting hot at the right time of year and injuries and being healthy and all of that. So I love the postseason. It's just best time of year.
I couldn't agree more. And certainly as a Yankees fan, we saw that last year with this Yankees team that, you know, hosted the wild card game and was down 3-0 with our starter out after the top of the first. And, you know, we take the Astros to, you know, we're one game away from going to the Fall Classic. So so we'll see if maybe we can replicate that this year. But first of all, congratulations to you and Mike on the birth of your son. And congratulations on another season with Quick Pitch. And thank you so much for making some time for us. Good luck covering the postseason.
My pleasure. Happy to join you.
Great spot from MLB Network's Heidi Watney. Best of luck to her and safe travels to her as she gets ready to cover the ALDS, ALCS, and World Series for MLB Network. Thanks to you for tuning in, for rating, reviewing, and subscribing, for following on social media. We're at Pinstripe Lanes. We're everywhere you can get podcasts. If we're not somewhere where you normally get podcasts, drop us a line, pinstripelanes@gmail.com. Oh, yeah, we even got a Gmail. We're so legit around here. We just need like a sponsor or five, and we'll be all set. That's a wrap for episode number 16 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Thanks for tuning in, and let's go, Yankees.